Maybe we can start off too talking a little bit about the Pullman neighborhood. I don't know, people in Chicago certainly should be familiar with Pullman. It's an extremely important historic neighborhood, a beautiful neighborhood, but I don't know if everybody is familiar with where it's at exactly. So can you talk a little bit about where in the city it's at and that kind of thing?
Sure, yeah. I'm pretty sure not everybody is familiar with Pullman because we are a well-guarded secret, it seems. But each day when I get out and around, people always have something nice to say about Pullman if I meet them around the city. Pullman's on the far south side of the city, and it was a planned community. George Pullman, when he built his railroad car factory out here, originally it wasn't part of the city of Chicago, and he bought up a large tract of land out here south of the city, which was in Hyde Park Township at the time. And then subsequently it was annexed into the city. So it's roughly our boundaries are from 113th to 115th Street, and then just east of I-94 Expressway and west of Cottage Grove Avenue. Oh, excuse me, west of I-94 and east of Cottage Grove Avenue.
And that's where the celebration will be held on Labor Day, correct?
Yeah, it's going to be held at the old Pullman factory and clock tower that was recently restored at 11035 South Cottage Grove, roughly at the corner of 111th and Cottage.
And that area has been well preserved too as an historic district, is that right?
Yes, half of Pullman has been. There's a northern part of Pullman. Then we have the factory complex and all the buildings that some which are remaining and some which used to be there. And then there was a south section because the south section organized back in the 1960s to save the community, and then further they received historic designation. All of that, about 95% of the original housing stock from 1882 has been preserved. So today, we are not a total museum. We are it's a living community. People do inhabit the homes and apartments that are in South Pullman. North Pullman is following suit too, and they've begun a resurgence in North Pullman to save a lot of the properties up there with help from Park National Bank initiatives and the National Housing Service. So hopefully they'll catch up to us, and we'll be able to preserve all of the original housing stock here.
Yeah, that's what's interesting, I think, about Pullman is they've been able to preserve so much of the original housing. You still see the various levels of housing, the housing for the owners or the managers, and the housing for the workers and so on. The buildings have been well preserved. People have been taking real pride in keeping them up. But it's not, like you said, a museum. It actually is a living community, a living, thriving actually community in the neighborhood. What is the community like? Is it primarily a working class community?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's. At one point in time, of course, a lot of the people that lived here worked in the Pullman. Well, at first, everybody worked in the Pullman plant, and then after Pullman had to divest himself of his homes in the early 1900s, people bought them up. Individuals bought the homes then, and a lot of them still were employed at the Pullman plant, and then a lot of them worked at Sherwin-Williams Paint Factory, which employed thousands out here, and a lot of other industry that once was dotted the landscape in this neighborhood. Electromotive, Wisconsin Steel, U.S. Steel, a lot of steel-related companies and foundries. So it was a working-class neighborhood. Today, of course, gosh, most of that industrial history is gone, and a lot of the people now commute downtown because we have the Metra Electric that comes right through and right into Pullman, and a lot of people that work for universities and other institutions, hospitals and whatnot.
You mentioned George Pullman, who founded the neighborhood, who was the founder of the Pullman Car Company, the famous company that built these very luxurious cars that were attached to the railroads for people to travel long distances back in the days when train travel was the primary form of transportation.
Right.
And you talked about how he built this, what was meant to be a model workers' kind of village or town around the factory. Can you talk a little bit about what that idea was all about?
Sure. In fact, his company was called the Palace Car Factory, Pullman Palace Car Factory mm-hmm. Company. So it did note that it was a more luxurious form of train travel that he was building. And the company town was built. There were different types of housing stock in the area, and depending on your place in the company, it would determine what type of housing you had. So we had closest to the factory. Of course, at that time, everybody walked to work, and the offices and the plant were right nearby. And the people with the best jobs, the people that were supervisors and accountants and whatnot, they had the bigger homes that were closest to the factory. And then as you got a little bit further away, you had workers' cottages, and you had the semi-skilled laborers. And then over on the further end, you had those that had the lowest jobs in the company, and they lived in sort of tenement housing at the time, big block houses. Mm-hmm. And a couple of those are missing from the landscape today. We still have two that remain. I think they're now converted into 12-flat apartments. And so that's how that was determined. Pullman himself, of course, lived down in the ritzy, glitzy Prairie Avenue district, which was down in 18th and Prairie, where you had the Fields and the Palmers and the Armor and the other industrialists and rich folks in the city had their digs. So and Pullman, of course, was known to have the most opulent home in that neighborhood there, and I think it was the largest and most expensively appointed. So there was quite a difference between what was out here in the town and what he the place where he lived on 18th and Prairie Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Pullman presented his model village as kind of a real improvement over working conditions or living conditions, I should say, for workers in those days. In other words, most factories obviously didn't provide housing, and oftentimes housing in the workers' neighborhoods was very poor quality housing.
Right.
So he presented this as kind of a model for the future, that companies should take responsibility for providing housing for workers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, indeed he did. If you were to compare Pullman, once he built it, to and if you read Jungle, perhaps, the conditions down in the Bridgeport and Back of the Yards neighborhoods and how horrible things were, Pullman really was a great place to live at that time. Every home was built at that time with indoor plumbing, which was kind of new to the city of Chicago. And he did try to have the best amenities for his people and nice stores. Of course, he owned everything, including the stores, and kind of controlled through wages what you were able to shop for and whatnot. But it was a well-kept and well-maintained neighborhood. He didn't allow any liquor establishments. He was quite a prude, I guess, in that way. But he wanted to. He didn't think that his workers should have the. I think he called it, using his own words, the baneful habit of alcohol consumption. So Pullman didn't have, but it did have one liquor establishment, but that was to serve out of town guests and the upper class people that worked in the factories. But nothing for the common working man.
And that kind of social engineering was quite extensive, I understand, in the Pullman neighborhood. I mean, one of the things that they were very careful to do was to build a number of churches and so on, and really encourage the workers to attend services at these churches and so on. There's a lot of real emphasis put on the idea that the workers had to be kind of molded into the right model for you know, being good workers.
Well, I guess I would tell you, Jerry, that you're half right on that. Mm. There's only one church within Pullman proper, and that was owned by George Pullman, and it was developed as a money-making venture. It was not to help develop spirituality of his inhabitants. It was rented out to those that wanted to worship and those that formed congregations. Now, the adjoining neighborhoods are where the most of the other churches cropped up because... Mm. People didn't want to rent Mr. Pullman's facility, or as congregations grew, they were able to purchase their own property and build. For example, nearby we had two different Catholic churches and Lutheran churches. The one that Pullman had originally built was non-denominational and ultimately became a Methodist church, which it still is today, in fact, in a beautiful church which I got married in 1976. It's called the Greenstone Church because it had it's built from green limestone that was imported from New England, I believe. And so I don't know that he promoted that, his folks to attend church, but he did promote his church in that he wanted people to pay rent to use it. The other places that were used, I guess, in the arcade, the original arcade building, which was kind of a forerunner to our modern-day shopping plaza, he did have rental space in there. And then at our market hall on the third floor, he had a large meeting place that also church services could be held at. Mm-hmm. But the one church was the Greenstone, which still stands today, and in fact, we're hosting our hobo concert there in a couple of weeks, so we use it for a lot of community events.
Now, this model village concept was, again, you know, a big deal at the time, and this really became a big attraction during the 1893 World's Fair, right? A lot of people took the train from the World's Fair out to Pullman to visit the village there and see what they thought at the time would be the wave of the future.
Right, yes. In fact, he was lauded around the world, and I think won a prestigious award in Prague for the most most beautiful planned community in the world. And indeed, the World's Fair did bring a lot of attention, and they built some new housing stock to house people that came here to visit from the World's Fair, which stand today. And it's a real cool Moorish type of architecture, which kind of differentiated it from the Victorian model that originally was built, but it's built around the Market Square area, and they're still standing today. It's really neat with all the archways and the gangway that runs through it. It's been used for a lot of movie sets and commercial shots and things like that. Yeah, I don't think you'll find anything in the city that's like it.
Now, it's interesting, of course, 1883, in a sense, may have been the high point of kind of right. Pullman as a model village, but then a year later, 1894, was kind of the low point where a lot of the downsides, I guess, of the Pullman's concept came out, where, of course, he was very anti-union, opposed unions amongst his workers. When the economy took a hit there, he basically cut workers' hours but still charged them the same amounts for their housing and so on. And this, all these various factors led to a strike in 1894 that is actually one of the most important strikes in U.S. history. Eugene Debs makes his first major appearance on the political or the labor scene in that strike, right?
Right, right. And I do believe it was the very first national strike. Mm. So I think it kind of sets the pace and labor history as being the first national strike that had its roots here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course, the railroads being key there again, because Debs was the founder of this very newly formed American Railway Union, which is one of the first attempts at doing an industrial union in the U.S. that spanned the country. And they actually were supporting basically the Pullman strikers, and they went out on strike too, which got the government involved, and I know troops were brought in eventually and everything.
Right, right. And a lot of people are mistaken in that believing that violence took place here in Pullman, but apparently, from what I know about the history, there were violent acts that occurred further up in the city, but it all was connected to the same strike, and troops were brought into the Pullman neighborhood and Pullman area here to turn back the strikers, I guess, or try to get them to go back to work and to guard the Pullman plant. But further up in the, I think in the Canaryville and Bridgeport areas, there were acts of sabotage, and there were some shootings and whatnot that took place up there.
It's amazing how many people too that we think of later on in labor history got a start in this particular struggle. We talked about Debs, the fact that his American Railway Union went on strike across the country to support the Pullman workers. You also had people that were going down to visit the workers in Pullman to check on their conditions and provide reports. People like the founder of the Settlement House movement in Chicago, Jane Addams, the famous attorney Clarence Darrow, who became very important in a lot of labor struggles later on as well.
Right.
So a lot of people, you know, kind of make their appearance, their first major appearance in the public scene in this particular strike.
Right. Well, I'd like to look a little bit more into the Jane Addams angle. I'm not really aware of that. I haven't seen that in my studies, but my studies are rather limited.
Okay.
However, it could be true. That was about the same time in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And, of course, then along also came A. Philip Randolph, who I hope we're going to mention the Labor Day celebration that we're going to have here, where we feature A. Philip Randolph and Eugene Debs.
Yeah, let's talk about that now. What do you got planned for Labor Day?
Well, Labor Day is always a big deal here in Pullman because of its place in labor history. And each year we have had some type of presentations. We have a visitor center / museum, and our Hotel Florence, which is still preserved, that was named after Pullman's daughter, and where George Pullman entertained out-of-town guests and maintained a suite of his own there. He didn't actually live there, but sometimes he did stay at the Hotel Florence. So we have had different kinds of celebrations and presentations and parades over the years, and a few years ago, we started a Labor Day bike ride, which I think we're now into the fourth year of that. It's a 30-mile bike ride that winds from Pullman throughout the southeast side, where there were several other important sites in labor history, and ends up in Marktown on the Indiana East Chicago town, which was another company town, a steel mill out there. I guess it was the Mark Steel Company, which ultimately became Inland and I think is now part of Mattel. But so it celebrates Pullman and Marktown, both planned communities. We have a counterpart organization over in Marktown that greets the riders over there and then takes them to some of the important labor sites. And, of course, we hit the Memorial Day Massacre site, which is on Chicago's east side, where 10 steel workers were killed in 1937. So the area is lush with a lot of labor history, which brings us back to why we celebrate here in Pullman. And this year, this is a free event, and the Labor Day bike ride kicks off at 9 a.m., and then they return about 1 or 1:30 and have lunch. And then we have a program plan this year where we have a number of actors that are going to be portraying people that had important roles in the early labor union movement. You've already touched on two of them, Eugene Debs and A. Philip Randolph. And thirdly, there was a young lady, a young girl, in fact, who lived in Pullman. Her name was Jenny Curtis. She worked in the plant from the time she was about 15 until she was about 20 or 21 years old. At that time, they employed kids to do some of the menial tasks that didn't require a lot of heavy lifting and stuff. And she was part of a group of girls that were needle workers, they called themselves. And they worked on, as upholsterers and working on cloth and upholstery for the palace cars, for the sleeping cars. And she turned out to be an organizer of the girls that worked in the plant, and went on to testify before Congress after the Pullman strike, and gave a couple of profound, fiery little talks for a young girl to different labor organizations, and she was celebrated at the time because she was pretty sharp and quite brave for a young girl. So those are the three labor leaders, and then this being the anniversary, the 75th anniversary of the New Deal, we have a special appearance by Franklin D. Roosevelt. And the fellow that's playing him is R.J. Lindsay. He's portrayed FDR many, many, many times on TV, in personal appearances, and one-act plays across the country. So it's going to be a real treat to have Mr. Lindsay in full garb, and including either the wheelchair or braces, and he has the air and the voice of FDR. So that's our lineup: Eugene Debs, A. Philip Randolph, Jenny Curtis, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So that kicks off at 2 o'clock, Jerry, at the and it's a special treat because we're going to be in the old Pullman Factory building and Clock Tower building, which has been under renovation for the past number of years since the state took over, and after we've had the big fire there in 1998. And so a restoration project has been taking place there, and this is one of the first big events that we're going to have within the old factory there. Of course, it's been used for some movie sets over the last few years, most recently Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks and Paul Newman. The opening scene shows hundreds of workers pouring out of the mill gate there, and they recreated that for the movie. And so we're really excited about that, that we're going to have it in there, and it's a perfect backdrop for our set.
Well, it definitely sounds like the ideal place to spend Labor Day in Chicago. I think it's a great idea. If people want to get more information about what's going on that day, who should they contact?
Okay, well, they can go to our website, if I might be able to give the website
sure.
address. Okay, it's http://laborday.pullmanevents.info.
And we'll put that link too up on at least on my blog. I don't know if we'll get it up on the Labor Express website tonight, but we'll definitely put it on my blog, and I'll remind people about that as well. Is there a number to call to, or
they can call me at 773-370-3305.
Great.
And I want to say that this is being done in conjunction with the Pullman Civic Organization, the Historic Pullman Foundation, the Illinois Labor History Society, the state AFL-CIO, the Bronzeville Black Chicago History Historical Society, and a number of other groups that have come together to put this together. And of course, this is at the State of Illinois Historic Site at Pullman, so we owe them a debt of gratitude for letting us do it on the premises there. There will be music, there will be refreshments, it's all free, as I mentioned, and it's very easily to get to us, either by the Metro Electric that I talked about, or taking the Red Line. I think the Red Line is the one on the Dan Ryan, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And if you're driving off I-94 at 111th Street exit, we're just about half a mile west from the 111th Street exit, and we have plenty of parking.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tom, for talking about this, and I definitely look forward to seeing you on Labor Day.
You bet. Thank you. Glad to hear that you're coming out.